It's those two assholes, those two idiots you saw me talking to at the third rail.
Just he doesn't want to touch the third rail.
That is the third rail, saying white people have interest.
Third rail. The third rail here is another wonderful show on the TRS network.
And it's the third rail. You will be destroyed.
It's the third rail. You will be destroyed.
Watch out for the third rail, baby. That's high voltage.
And the opinion of this reporter, if this nation or, in fact, the world ever needed heroes, that time is now. That time is now.
All right. Like me, teaming up with the blacks to hate on Asians, this is happening. This is episode 193 of the most huggable and most handsomest podcast this side of the Rio Grande. Hi, I'm Bellerophon, your resident mouth of the South and big truck respecter, and I trapped Spectre in a hobbit hole so I could take the show back. Take that, you old manlet. joining me on the show today, we have the man who has oppressed minorities in all 420 of his previous incarnations. We have Dharma King. Namaste. Say hey, sir.
Namaste, my niggas.
That's a good drop right there. We need to clip that if possible. Also on the mic, we have the man who's ignored daylight savings time because he's always on GPT, Nikephoros. Say hey.
Hello, gentlemen.
All right. Yeah, we were bouncing ourselves a little bit off air, and Nikkei was bouncing himself honorably, saying like, "Hey, I showed up on time. We can use that as a joke for the intro." So thanks for falling on that sword there.
I fall on swords harder than I fall on my bed.
All right, and before we get into our table of contents, a quick word from our sponsor for this episode. This episode of Third Rail is proudly sponsored by Milo's forthcoming gay conversion camp. Just by listening to this episode, you're automatically signed up. There is no escape.
Oh, no.
All right. All right. On to our table of content. Yeah, I figured I'd keep that one short and sweet because sometimes fun, yeah. Brevity is the soul of wit. All right, DK, since I introduced you first, man, what do you want to intro this week?
My winner is stairs. My loser is the pig American Empire. And my topic, I don't know, I'm curious to discuss geopolitical machinations, but we'll see. I don't know how relevant that'll be.
All right, I like it, I like it. DK, what we got on deck, brother?
All right, I got winners. Volcano demons, and just as a topic, I'd like to do some more discussion of this pedo judge in Milwaukee.
Yeah, that is probably an endless fount of reeing on our part, that's for sure. Alrighty, and then what I got on deck, my loser is critical race theory, for once. My winner, electronic monitoring of the tribe, and my topic for comfy discussion, women in the military. Alrighty, so when we were chattering a little bit, you know, pre-show, just talking about our prep and everything, I'm not gonna lie, Nikkei, that volcano demon bit, I think that's a great lighthearted way to start everything off, and it's some interesting synchronicity with all the memes that we make about, you know, the Jewish volcano demon. So yeah. If there's no objections, why don't you lead off with that, homie?
It's a pretty straightforward chain of events. The country of Iceland has officially recognized Judaism as a religion, which hadn't been true, I guess, in Iceland. There is official designations of religions, probably for different rights and protections, maybe even funding, depending on what their laws are. I'm not an expert. But it was, you know, the story broke about it just last night. People have probably heard the story of their first rabbi arriving in 2018, Avi Feldman, You started a chapter of Chabad Lubavitch over there. And what this meant was they were trying to ban circumcision as a practice, and then they send Rabbi Feldman over, and I believe he was successful at putting a stop to that legislation.
Oh, thank God. You know, thank God that they were able to stop
thank
the oppression
God.
There.
Still suck baby dicks.
You know, prayers answered. And if I remember right, that rabbi in Iceland, that's a pretty new phenomenon, right? That happened like, what, 2-3 years ago, tops?
It was very recent. I actually, this is what I should have gone with, because I saw this, and it's on the exact same note, Nikkei. Unfortunately, I don't have video set up for this, but so whatever, it'll be audio only. But for those of you listening live, there was a Pete Kraft, our friend of the show, and Graf Twitter member noted there was a story in three parts about now, you know, Ireland a few years back. They legalized abortion. And then more recently, they legalized homosexual marriage. And now, February 9th, 2020, well, I guess it's a little old, but still, a Dublin man has become the recipient of the first venomous snake bite ever recorded in Ireland. Legend has it that St. Patrick used the power of his faith to drive all of Ireland's snakes into the sea. Blah, 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 science, blah, blah, blah. And yeah, so, you know, of course, this is, you know, just a coincidence, bro. The science says there's no connection between, yeah, bullshit.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm just saying the snakes weren't there before.
Exactly.
Why do you niggas fuck up?
I mean, the first image that comes to mind is, first of all, like the... I guess given where I'm at, right? Like some of these fundamentalist, like primitive Baptists that do snake handling. But we all know that it's not nearly that Christian nowadays, unfortunately, over on the Emerald Isle. I mean, I think it's been discussed elsewhere, right? But isn't allegedly the snake metaphor for St. Patrick driving out the snakes, isn't that claimed in some circles to be a metaphor for, you know, driving out the Jews?
Jews specifically, I don't know. Definitely like non-Christians.
I heard paganism is
paganism.
The,
exactly.
Metaphor.
Yeah. This is something that like, I want, maybe this is a good opportunity to riff on. Cause this has been kind of coming up more and more. Larry had that great bit about magic that then, you know, the whole Wiznat thing, you know, which was just a hilarious and excellent episode of this very fine program. And if you haven't listened to it, you should definitely listen to that prior episode. I forget which number it was, though. And then, you know, Mike was talking on Tedious the other day about how, because I think it was Maracu in the one of the bits on the Merchant Minute was sort of, you know, half joking, half serious, or sort of questioning, bringing up this question of, you know, what's the deal with foreskins, and like, you know, what is the
what's the deal with foreskins,
right? And you know, is you know, it's because it certainly seems like, you know, on the one hand they're taking all these, they're getting, the Jews are getting the goyim to cut their son to genitally mutilate their sons. And you know, as Mike points out in the Hebrew Bible, it's very explicit that this is a thing that they do to humiliate their conquered peoples. When the Hebrews are conquering neighboring peoples, one of the humiliations that they impose on them is cutting off the foreskins of their men and feeding them to the volcano demon. So Mike. And I think this is not at all exclusive to him. I just to be clear, this is like, I don't even say this is a disagreement necessarily. I'm just trying to clarify something or speak from my own perspective here. You know, there's certainly room for a kind of strictly materialist reading of history. And so Mike's whole thing was like, well, you know, it's not to look at it as like the Jews are collecting all these foreskins and feeding them to the volcano demon, and that's the source of their power, is in a sense to give them too much credit. It's putting the cart before the horse, or reversing the causality In other words, it's not that they get power from that. It's that they have power, and then they exercise that power by imposing this humiliation ritual on their subjects. I don't think that's wrong. My perspective is slightly different. I think, and to get back into the thing about like St. Patrick, and also with the volcano in Iceland, which is, you know, kind of another one of these instances where, like, I think you have to look at it as a feedback loop. It's not that A causes B or that B causes A. It's that A and B exist in a feedback loop. And so when we're talking about ritual power, like the power to impose on a society that they're going to genitally mutilate their children is the power to run the world. Like people have this often simplistic idea about magic. I've talked about this before, especially I think on Right Wing Dharma Squads, but people have this simplistic idea of magic that it's like fireballs or something, you know, from like D&D or a video game or something.
Well, if it's not, it's really lame. It's very mundane.
Well,
or I mean, making boats fly.
The point is, from a kind of like neutral description of like quote unquote magic or sorcery or whatever you want to call it, like every Christian liturgy, every mass is a magical act of transmutation, right? Where you're taking one substance, one physical, well, you know, in Catholicism and Orthodoxy, I guess, primarily, you're taking ordinary, mundane bread and wine, and you're transforming them into Christ, into the deity. So like this idea that magic is this like thing that if it doesn't have like, you know, fancy flashing lights, that it's not like really happening. That's not really how it works. If you like are into this stuff or you understand, you know, fundamentally what we're talking about is the ability to influence causal processes. And it's, I think, undeniable that their ritual actions, both, you know, as I was speaking earlier of the mystery of the real presence or the transubstantiation into Christ, or the, you know, the foreskin thing, like these are physical actions in the physical world that are occurring within a religious or ritual context that are having, you know, in other words, my point here, I guess, is you can't separate. It's a mistake to try to separate these things. It's a mistake to try to like separate, like, oh, here's a purely spiritual thing and here's a purely physical thing. Like, that's kind of a product of certain intellectual historical pressures in European history that I think we need to get away from and look at these things as being more integrated. That's just, you know, my two cents. But I think it's really. You know, like again, the power to force your enemy's children to be foreskinless is the power to run the banks, is the power to rule the world. These are not separate.
No, I fully agree with that. And I guess the next question is, if just having one rabbi over in Iceland banning circumcision, if that makes a 6,000-year-old dormant volcano, you know, just go boom. What does that mean? What does that mean we're in store for? Isn't there like that super volcano that's still like lurking underneath Yosemite? Like, what are we in store for in America, I guess? If they reach a critical mass, does that giant volcano just, you know, go up in smoke and
that would
we
be,
say goodbye
that would be
to the
too
North
merciful.
American?
God is a merciful God, but he's not that merciful.
Do you want volcano demons, Larry? This is how you get volcano demons.
I actually hadn't explained the second part of this chain of events here. Hours after this news breaks about this Iceland's official recognition, this
oh shit!
Volcano,
did I tell? I'm sorry. I didn't realize. I'm sorry. Yes, go on.
A volcano that has not erupted in 6,000 years. Started spewing lava that was visible from over 20 miles away on the Reykjanes Peninsula. There hadn't been any volcanic activity on this peninsula in 781 years. And it just so happens that, you know, hours after this news breaks about Iceland's recognition of Judaism, the police have to tweet out to the people that they need to have their windows closed to prevent toxic gases from entering their households, including sulfur dioxide and hydrogen fluoride as a result of the eruption.
So you could say nature was trying to gas the island to cleanse it while Judaism was still in its infancy.
It's like, I have to finish this now before it gets too strong. Some details about what this means. According to the Jerusalem Post, the decision is significant because it allows Jews to pay taxes towards their own religious institutions. Jewish marriages, baby naming, and funerals will also be accepted by civil law. So it does come with rights and privileges that aren't granted to unrecognized religious institutions.
Well, it makes me wonder, like, is there always... What would the cause and effect be, comically, if they start recognizing sort of, like, random-ass other faiths? Like, what's going to happen if they recognize, like, let's say, like, classical paganism? What would happen if they recognize
Hinduism,
like,
and the streets start filling with human feces?
Oh, man, dude, racist hive mind. You stole my punchline. Awesome. Right there.
Love my racist hive mind.
But no, it is, it is kind of wild, right? And I guess we're all in the... Maybe we need to just punt this one over to the paranormies and, you know, figure out if the volcano is trans, figure out, like, if Aleister Crowley foresaw this 200 years ago, something like that. But yeah, we don't believe in coincidences over here. And man, those events sure seem pretty tightly bound up. Probably not just a coinky dink.
Yeah, I mean, as if the volcano eruption wasn't good enough on its own, the fact that, you know, the public safety has to issue a warning that, you know, deadly gases have been emitted into the atmosphere due to this eruption, and you need to, like, you know, prevent that from getting into your house.
I hope they all have wooden doors. I mean, I guess the door, you know, this is the easy joke, but I hope they all have steel doors.
Oh, yeah. Anybody with a wooden door in Iceland is fucked.
Some listening might say that's a cheap joke, but to them, I would say those are the best jokes. And also,
the most
nobody's...
affordable.
Yeah, I was going to say, it might be a cheap joke, but the only person cheaper than a Jew is an anti-Semite. So, you know, take that, haters.
That works.
but yeah,
you
want to
go into one
the,
of your topics?
Yeah, I was about to gracelessly pivot to that if we've exhausted all of our volcano demon jokes. So my loser of the week is critical race theory, and this is fairly hot off the presses, but apparently Governor Ron DeSantis over in Florida is and we're reading off the root because I think they give the best attempt at, like, big snooting and making it sound highbrow. It's a personal favorite publication of mine. But DeSantis has gone on to say, and I quote, "There's no room in our classrooms for things like critical race theory. Teaching kids to hate their country and to hate each other is not worth one red cent of taxpayer money." And so, first of all, big agree. And also, this is not just something he tweeted off, like, while he was taking a crap in his house. This was a planned statement while he was giving a prepared speech on Florida's curriculum regarding, like, COVID-19 update and kind of updating on education and, you know, the schedule and what have you that they would do for the remainder, I guess, of the COVID crisis. So
was this,
this was not something
also made from Israel.
to my knowledge, no. When I look at the picture of it, I only see an American flag and a Florida flag. I don't see any Israeli flags in the background.
Well, you might get impeached for breaking his own law there. I thought all new announcements have to be made from Israel, thanks to his own legislation.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, DeSantis can be, shall we say, vexing in that regard.
Well, he's clearly, I mean, the problem I have with DeSantis, I don't know enough to know, but obviously if he's not the governor of Florida without Jews being behind him. I mean, let's give me a break. And he's clearly the inheritor of the mantle of Trumpism. I have, you know, my like normie conservative type friends who are like maybe sympathetic to our point of view, but not fully on board, are very enthusiastic about like DeSantis 2024. And that's the shit that gives me pause, because that's obviously just going to be another derail.
Emphasis on the pause.
Yeah. Yeah. And so like clearly they're setting up, I fully expect a DeSantis Hawley to be the ticket in 2024, and it's just retarded enough to work is my fear.
Dude, we're going to, like,
I got you.
See, like, you know, they're only going to release ads in Spanish to play up the DeSantis is Latino.
I'm sure they'll have ads in Hebrew too for Broward County.
Yeah, right.
I mean,
well,
like,
it's in Spanish with Hebrew subtitles.
Oh my God! Possible show title. Anyway, we'll see.
I was thinking either that or this is how you get volcano demons, Larry.
Yeah.
I like racist hive mind, but we'll keep going.
Oh yeah, yeah. I just stepped right over that. No, we're the creative juices are kind of effortlessly flowing this morning for all of us. It's a good sign. But yeah, so I guess what you're driving at, DK, is your theory, and I think it holds water, is that he's just sort of he's attacking the easy, low tier normicon boogeyman of critical race theory, and that'll be his clarion call to a 2024 run. For
DeSantis
the presidency,
is like,
all while doing nothing about the border.
DeSantis doesn't have the, he didn't have the. I mean, Donald Trump was famous in the 80s as a personality on TV and a kind of larger than life, you know, New York guy. Long before anything having to do with The Apprentice, which obviously just made him even more famous. DeSantis doesn't have that. Past. He doesn't have quite that stature. What he does have is, you know, youth, articulateness, something approximating a greater degree of ideological coherence. It's not our ideology. I do not support him, obviously. I mean, I hope all this stuff goes without saying. But the point is, DeSantis is, I've been watching him somewhat carefully, because I think with Josh Hawley, it's clear that this is where the institutional Republican Party is putting all their, like, this is going to be the containment zone for Trumpism within the party, and this is going to be the, like, sop that we throw to MAGAtards. That's been very, very clear, especially over the past year or so. And look, I don't want to be too hard on the guy personally. I think, like, it seems that he's done a pretty good job as managing the day-to-day operations of Florida, which is not an insignificant task. And in particular, not that it'll matter and not that this is in any way to be construed as justification for voting for him, but it is a fact. Like, Florida's voting system was a complete nightmare. I mean, they had the embarrassment, obviously, of 2000, but as recently as 2016, it was a joke and things were coming in. And he did a very good job of cleaning it up to the point where they were not able to do any kind of fraud in any kind of meaningful way. And all the results were in. You know, Florida is one of the first states to declare the official results at, you know, by, like, I think it was 9 p.m. or so Florida time. So, you know, it's pretty clear, like, you know, he is a competent man, if nothing else. All the more reason to be wary, because we can be 100% guaranteed, like, you know, to me, the question is less, like, you know, obviously electoral politics are retarded and there's no point in participating in them from our perspective. As an outside observer of the electoral process, or like this farce that whatever people, you know, that we have this vestigial attachment to, I think the relevant question here is, are they, like, so retarded and so power hungry and so, like just completely, you know, they're like, nope, this is it. We're pulling the plug on all this voting stuff, and white people are over. So to the extent that they are going to do the bit, which I this is frankly what I expect, is 2 years and one day of Biden, or whatever, Biden's shambling corpse, held up by adrenochrome and puppet strings, and then after 2 years and one day of Biden, he resigns, and we get 10 years straight of Kamala Harris, and she's just, you know, complete, I don't imagine what that's going to look like. Or are there enough forces within the apparatus? Are they, you know, is there enough of a kind of like, you know, I don't even want to call it moderation, just people who understand just how destructive that's going to be to them, to their own project, to their own kind of long-term goals, that they want to, you know, boil the frog a little more slowly by allowing DeSantis and Hawley to take the White House in 2024. And again, I'm not invested in that either outcome either way. I think there's in some ways, I think 10 years of Kamala Harris would be more useful to us. I think it would heighten the contradictions, to use, you know, Marxist language, more than I think allowing the frog to, you know, we're at a critical point, and you know, giving white people the illusion of some kind of comfort, or that something's going to be done, I think is more dangerous than allowing Harris's ideological commissars to run rampant through the Department of Justice, et cetera. But I don't know. We'll see.
Well, and it probably doesn't even matter, not to be more cynical and black-pilled than usual, right? But, you know, this is the black pill long ship. So, I mean, regardless of how we influence white voters, you know, to the extent we can, I mean, the 2020 election proved that doing a vote tally, you know, actually counting the votes, like, doesn't matter. the ballots will get stuffed for whoever.
That's what makes the whole thing like hard to really evaluate, right? People can, you know, the power elites can exact the outcome they want, and it's plain to see. I mean, it's nothing we didn't already know, but I think we all still were shocked about how blatant it was.
Yeah, I mean, we literally have video. I mean, I'm never not going to argue with people that like, I mean, we literally have the video of the dumb N-words in Atlanta, like, pulling out ballots. We, you know, yes, all the shit in Philadelphia. And, like, you're never going to convince me. I'm sorry. And I have the, like Shaniqua and all these people in Detroit, in Milwaukee, in Philadelphia, and Atlanta, and that was enough to change the result. I don't care. At this point, kind of like a, like, to the extent that I have any emotional investment, it's purely in the intellectual point. Like, I get mad when people are wrong on the internet. Maybe that's a personal failing on my end. But
hey, you and me both, brother.
But I think that's how we all get here.
Yeah.
We didn't get mad about people being wrong on the internet.
But, like, you know, I told myself, because obviously that was like, this is a kind of unpopular opinion within the TRS sphere for the past couple of months. It's fine. I don't, you know, it's all kind of like, I looked at it as, you know, as this was situation was developing in November, December, I always thought, like, you know, for purely kind of, I don't know, whatever vestiges of, I wouldn't even say, I don't know, the word that popped to mind is procedural liberalism. That's not quite right. More just like rule of law. Like, the law says one thing and these people are wildly violating it. For fuck's sake, Georgia code, I tracked down the Georgia election code. Georgia election code specifies you are not allowed to stop counting until all the ballots are cast. If there's the one exception to that is if it's an uncontested race. If it's an uncontested race, then you, like, and you're just purely for formal reasons, like, you know, that you have one candidate running unopposed, and you can, like, you can tally up the votes, and stop tallying and resume in the morning as long as there's a clear chain of custody and blah, blah, blah. Other than that, if there's a contested race in Georgia, you are not allowed to stop counting until all the ballots are cast. Period. It's in the Georgia election code. I looked it up. You know, so don't tell me all this shit about, like, oh, well, you know, like, I just, I don't want to hear it. That said, I was like, you know, I'm sure that, like, you know, however many months from now, like, however this ends up getting resolved, and you know, Mike foresaw the gay op. I did not foresee the gay op. But either way, I was like, you know, I figure a couple months from now, however this is resolved, it's you know, going to, we're going to meet up on this, because it's not going to, it's really, at the end of the day, like, how much would Trump being reelected really have changed? Like, it gnaws at me in the sense of, like, this is an injustice that at some point will have to be answered, purely because, like, these people broke the law and got away with it. But, you know, like, would Trump, you know, I mean, what really would be different? I'm not even convinced. Trump bombed Syria twice. You know, would he not have bombed Syria like Biden did? I'm not convinced, you know? So, like, how much difference does it even really make?
Yeah, I think I'm trying to, like, articulate this thought on the fly, because I guess the hair I'm trying to split is, you know, not to relitigate the events from November, but it's like, I don't care about Trump, but at the same time, it, you know, just how brazen, I guess, all of these, you know, Democratic lesser thans were in just rigging the whole thing. I find that offensive, you know, and one can reasonably logically find that super offensive and just, you know, distasteful third world bullshit. Even if you don't give one, you know, even if you don't give one dead dog about Trump, if that distinction makes sense.
It just offends my Aryan sense of justice, pure and simple. But anyway, that's enough on that. I don't want to, like, relitigate this for the, I don't even know how many times. I just, you know, yeah. I guess the point is to get back, or are we done with DeSantis or
I
wanted to ask a question about the original story.
Yeah, fire away,
the
man.
Governor. What power does he have to, like, decide curricula? That's a county level thing. I feel that, you know, just thinking about it on its base level.
Governors, I don't know. I can't answer that specifically. I don't know, you know, Florida state law or any state law well enough really to say, other than, like, in practice, governors have near godlike powers in many respects, more powerful than the president of the United States within their particular state. On, like, it would take a lot for a president to influence what's happening in a particular state more than the governor of that state. There was, what was I reading? I think it was in the American Sun, Ryan Landry's most recent piece had a, he noted something on this point that basically in the event of, like, because it was Oklahoma, right? Was it 2 weeks ago? He says, Oklahoma moved in a direction that set the right up for right-wing nullification of the federal government. If an executive order is unconstitutional, Oklahoma can disregard it. This sets up the stupid out for the feds, where once the Supreme Court magically finds a constitutional basis for an executive order that shucks Oklahoma, you can't deny it. The thing is, and he was, like, sort of spinning this out, like, okay, well, what if, you know, a governor were to refuse to comply? And he says, this is a little test run for how the United States government would really handle a secession attempt. They wouldn't roll in tanks. The optics would be bad. Arresting the governor and inner circle would make sense and possibly be useful for establishing a narrative, but tanks in Kentucky is not a good look. They would much more likely do something indirect, like kicking a state and its banks off of SWIFT, the payment processing system for the American banking cartel. A right-winger I respect suggested that. It's a good move because it is bloodless. So is countering by blocking all rail traffic through the state going elsewhere. There are federal facilities in all states that have effects elsewhere. So playing with the utilities of deep blue cities is within grasp. Key would not be being a first and only mover. Everything is easier when you have friends. So the point there is, like, again, maybe the feds would be able potentially to arrest a governor in some kind of situation like that. But the reality is state national guards are under the direct command of the governor, as are state troopers, as are, in theory, although there is more, that's a direct line. There's a something of a slightly less direct line to municipal police departments. The governor, I mean, in theory, like, if say he refuses to comply with a federal with a presidential executive order, you know, Biden mandates or Harris mandates, you know, all white men must have sex with a tranny, you know, in public. And the, you know, Governor DeSantis or whoever says, no, we're not doing that. And the feds, you know, first of all, much more likely than rolling tanks in or anything like that would be, yeah, trying to cut them off. But then, you know, the governors, again, they could man the border of their state with, you know, direct the state National Guard to deploy at their border and, you know, refuse to comply in all sorts of ways. So that, I don't know if that's a direct answer to your question, Nikkei, as far as like what authority does he have. But if you think presidential executive orders are kind of an unchecked authority, you know, gubernatorial orders are even more so.
Well, I just was very specifically talking about in the context of like, you know, deciding school curricula. That's usually a county level school board. And they usually do have a strong degree of autonomy in that regard, despite their, you know, small size. And
I did
limited.
I did do my Googles while we were talking about it. I did do my Googles and yeah. So apparently it does vary state by state, but usually there is like a state board of education, you know, that sets sets like a minimum, like a scaffolding, if you will, that the county can build the remainder of the curriculum around. Right. So apparently, and I should know more about this, like basic government functions, right? But yeah, apparently there is like a state level board of education that does have, you know, not insignificant power over how things are conducted within the state borders, within the schools, if that answers your question.
Well, my reason for asking this is mostly because, like with all things the Republicans do, I wanted to see if this one was also just mostly ceremonial in impact, because you know, I almost forgot to run it through that heuristic of, oh, is this actually something the governor can do? Wait a second, I know that it's school boards that decide what the curriculum says in a given county, not the governor. Is this actually just another ceremonial measure that doesn't really change anything, in effect, necessarily?
So it appears that the governor can appoint the, you know, similar to a cabinet position in miniature, can appoint like the state board of ed, HNIC. Okay. So I guess in that way. And hopefully you won't get too many like angry PTA Karens in the comments, you know, correcting us on the minutia of Florida educational law. But that appears to be, I guess, the sort of like indirect control mechanism.
So what was actually passed? Was this something that the state legislature passed and he signed, or was this an executive order from the governor, or just like a direction issued to the school board? Like, what was the form of this announcement?
So it does not appear, at least as of the time when they published this article, it looks like he's just announcing the direction they're going to go in, and there's not any paperwork, there's not any governmental gubernatorial executive orders.
So he hasn't even
orders.
Done anything yet.
It appears not, no. And
it's a simulacrum of a ceremonial measure.
Yeah, we don't even...
It's even more bullshit than I imagined. Somehow, I consistently still surprise myself with how much bullshit actually goes on. Like, how much nothing there can actually be in the world of politics. I'm an idiot because I keep falling for it, Bellerophon. I'm a retard because this shit can still surprise me.
Well, I mean, that's all right, man. We're all retards, just crewmen on the Black Pill Longship together. Just
I should know better by now, though. I really should, and I don't.
but yeah, just to round out this, I guess this. Dialectic that they're posing within the root. So they offer a quote from Kimberly Crenshaw, and note that Kimberly, when I looked her up, she is a very uppity looking light skinned woman, And
Kimberley.
Does she have frizzy hair?
It appears to be in dreadlocks. So for the moment, no.
I'll call that nappy, but not necessarily frizzy. Anyway, sorry, go on.
No, it's an important distinction. Yeah, because I think
the
there is probably...
taxonomy of black hair.
Well, just remember, like, what was it, like 4 or 5 years ago? It seems there's always articles about, no, you cannot touch my hair.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's important to him, apparently. But the but note that her name, Kimberley, is K-I-M-B-E-R-L-E, and the last E has, like, a tilde on it.
Oh, wow, it is literally Kimberley.
Yeah, I'm not even shit posting. But so from the article, Kimberley Crenshaw, one of the founding scholars of CRT and the executive director and co-founder of the African American Policy Forum, says that critical race theory is a practice of way of seeing how the fiction of race has been transformed into concrete racial inequities. You know, a side note, if it's really that much of a fiction, then I don't know, why do they suck at math?
But that's, I'm a nigga.
Yeah. And then further on, it's an approach to grappling with a history of white supremacy that rejects the belief that what's in the past is in the past and that the laws and systems that grow from the past are detached from it, Crenshaw told Time in an email. While critical race theory was initially conceived as a framework specifically for understanding the relationship between race and American law, it's also provided a way to consider how other marginalized identities, such as gender, sexuality, sexual orientation, class, and disability, are overlooked. And then the last paragraph from the quote, what critical race theory has done is lift up the racial gaze of America. That's a pretty good, like, pretty good branding right there. That's a pretty good, like, marketing tack for letting black people destroy cities, lifting up the racial gaze.
I'm not a fan of racial gaze.
You know what? I'm not a fan of regular gays either, now that I think about it. But that was a quote from John Powell, the director of the impossibly named Othering and Belonging Institute at UC Berkeley.
Oh my God. Othering and Belonging Institute. Wow.
Yeah, so the...
I couldn't think of anything better.
But the one thing too that I just noticed in the byline for this root author, Zach Lindley, they do speaking of people with curious, I guess, resume lines. Zach Lindley bills himself as a poet, performer, freelance writer, blogger, and grown man lover of cartoons. So you know we can definitely take what he has to say seriously. And I guess the, you know, for those who are not familiar, like I was not familiar with Kimberley Crenshaw. And it's probably not worth going into like a whole, you know, a whole side piece on that. But yeah, she was like an old school, like sort of like light skinned black, like agitator. She was born in, she's 61 years old. And she's the leading scholar of critical race theory and developed the theory of intersectionality. So she's really like the you know the light skinned Shaniqua who's given the vocabulary of wokeness for like kind of the latest generation of policymakers to work with here. But really, that's really I think the big takeaways as Nike articulated this perfectly is. One, this is probably just going to be like empty words. It's not as I would be pleasantly surprised if this results in any actual legislation, in any actual like substantive curriculum change that I can put my hands on. And then yeah, to DK's point, like this is him probably just trying to test the waters to see how he polls, I guess, with the Trump crowd, you know, for a 2024 run. So. A simulacrum.
Trump did the same thing as we'll recall. I'm sure you all remember. Like Trump issued this completely toothless executive order that had no follow up and is now gone. As far as like we're not gonna be funding critical race theory in the federal government, And, you know, so, like, this is a direct continuation of that policy, right? I mean, I'm sure that is not lost on MAGATARDs and their enablers.
Yes.
I don't know. Sometimes I think a lot is lost on them.
One rule, rule of the game here. Never give Republicans credit for anything good.
They don't want credit for anything good. They all, I mean, no, like, they don't want it.
Arguably, this would be a good thing if it were real, but it isn't. It isn't real. It's fake. It, nothing has happened yet. And
yeah. Oh, go ahead.
And, like, okay, this fact is probably not going to be brought up when somebody's, you know, when the DeSantis shills come out in full force and say, oh, he banned critical race theory. No, he didn't. He didn't do anything. And even if that, and implying that's enough to, like, get me to support a particular candidate, especially with the atrocious track record on Israel he has, like, implying Republicans will ever do anything worth supporting. But never let anybody around you. This is most less so for our listeners and more so for the people around them that they interact with. Just whenever you hear, like, somebody in your life say, oh, ex-Republican did something great, just assume it's fake and then look it up and to see you just how fake it is. And then point this out to them and explain that they've fallen for a political trick.
You know, it was you know who's a racial gaze, and we know gay is a race, is Republicans. Republicans yes. are the racial gaze.
Yes.
Yeah. Fact. Because you know, I didn't think to look it up pre-show, but I do wonder along those lines if we're going to get if Milo's gay conversion camp that I made a passing joke to earlier.
It's in Florida, it even.
Yeah, that's what I was going to drive at, man. Like, more racial hive mind. That will the kind of shit test here, right? The litmus test will be: does he campaign? If it turns out that gay conversion camp, you know, is not just like a money grift, like a fundraising grift. If it turns out to be real, and DeSantis like says something against it, you know, tries to campaign against it, you know, saying we love our log cabin Republicans, we love our gays. Like, I'll eat my hat. I think the final red pill is not that the moon is fake and not real. The final red pill is that, yeah, Republicans are fake and just totally not real. Well, I thought that was a funny bit, but maybe it was one of those things where it was funnier in my head than the next
execution. I was expecting you to say fake and gay. Like, it was right there.
Yeah.
Oh, damn it. Son of a bitch. Fuck, dude. I gave myself a softball just right over the middle of the pellet. All right. I take back all the earlier compliments I was giving myself, I guess, for the creative juices flowing. Fuck, man. This is Bush League shit. I gotta step it up, man. Minus 50 racism points for me. But anyway, now that I've tripped over my own dick here, if we've kind of exhausted, you know, kvetching about the fakeness of, you know, the apparent fakeness of DeSantis, you know, DK, do you have anything in your prep stack?
It's not exactly prep. I don't know how much there is to say, but I think it's worth mentioning maybe the discussion that follows this, what we've been talking about already in terms of American domestic politics, this video of Biden failing to climb a set of stairs. You know, I guess, like, you know, the in before on this, which is not entirely wrong, is, you know, sometimes people trip. Like, I myself have tripped when going upstairs on occasion. It happens. I, however, am not a senile 80-year-old man.
He just came off of a foot injury.
I didn't know he had a foot injury.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. Well, there you go. I mean, and it wasn't to me the more troubling aspect of this was not the first slip up, but the second, like, because as you watch the video, he's going up the stairs, he kind of stumbles, he slips and falls, and then he gets up, but he's unbalanced, and he stays unbalanced, and then he slips and falls again.
Yeah, he like falters, and then he really falls hard when he tries to get back up.
Which, that's really not a good sign. I there was like a point sometime in, I don't remember, late 2019, early 2020, where I kind of felt bad for him because he's clearly, he needs to be in a retirement home watching daytime TV and eating ice cream with his grandkids. His and 100% Jewish, every single one of his grandkids is whatever. But like, you know, nevertheless, that's what he needs to be doing. Sorry, one second.
Hey, if it's Siege Baby in the background, you know, the listeners love hearing that. So don't feel like you have to mute up just for that, homie.
Yeah, we got a Siege Baby. We got a Siege Baby in the background.
yeah, cue the Bane meme, right? Like, Speak of the devil and he will appear.
But yeah, so the... Sorry, one more second.
Well, he's attending to, just some unbidden sieging in his household from the baby. One of the... I can't remember where I'm stealing this take from, but yeah, it probably... Like, Biden is toast, man. And this is hardly a hot take, but what that tells me is that his family is basically not ready for the grift to end. You know, they want to milk another 4 million out of some Ukrainian gas company. They want to milk another 10 million out of some, like, you know, Chinese government contract. And, you know, they're willing to just, you know, do elder abuse and keep that old man who doesn't know which way is up, who's literally saying salute the Marines, right, when his earpiece tells them to, instead of actually saluting the Marines.
It's hard to watch, man.
I don't know that that's the kind of shit, like, I'm convinced that there's reverse psychology gay ops happening, because like that thing with the Marines, could be, could not be. I don't know. I mean, I it wouldn't surprise me, but it's also like, it seems exactly like the kind of thing that they would plant in order to get people going on that narrative. Same thing with the, same thing with the, there was, I it was going insane. And we actually talked about this, Lewis and I on the, inaugural episode of Culture Terror, because, there was a, like, did you see this green screen thing, or maybe we were talking about it when I was,
yes.
Away?
Yes. The,
like, oh, okay. Yeah. So I don't know. Like, again, I'm not 100% either way. Like, I could totally see them doing a fake green screen thing. I could also see, like, maybe it's a compression. I mean, the video is weird. It's definitely strange. And it's like, and why would they be using very low quality video with weird compression artifacts? Anyway, like, but then, sorry, yeah, go on.
If that were the case, and I'm not saying I know for sure, but when have we ever seen anything else like that happen?
Never. Right.
I've seen videos with bad bit rates and compression,
yeah,
and I've never seen that.
Same. So. But here's my thing: is like, and this was Lewis's point originally, and I'm like, and there's a part of me that wants to go full like Johnny Monoxide on it, but then there's also like, you know, there's the other impulse to like take a step back and be like, okay. Twitter, which I'm not on anymore, but when I was loading up a tweet about something else, I saw that they had a thing on the sidebar, like a trending topic, experts say that the video was not doctored. So like they had to go all the way to the lengths.
Of course it wasn't doctored. You saw the mess up right there. If it was doctored.
Yeah, well, you know what I mean. But like, it wasn't fake or whatever. Like they were claiming that it was genuine. There wasn't a green screen, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, okay, I was totally willing to believe that this was like a compression artifact, but now the fact that Twitter like goes out of their way to these lengths to like, no, it's definitely real, Goy. Now you're making me very, very suspicious.
Yeah, the people I trust the least have something to say
exactly,
about this.
Exactly. And so, and then Lewis's thing was like, you know, like this is designed to make you go insane. This is this, what they're doing is they know, and that makes me think the whole thing is a gay op. That makes me not, I mean, obviously, yeah. I think Biden fell for real, but the thing with the Marines and the thing with the green screen, they're putting out really suspicious looking shit and getting, you know, people who are already suspicious of the media to jump on it so that they have them like going down these rabbit holes. Like, again, I'm not saying, like, obviously the man is a senile idiot. He, like, as I said, needs to be in a retirement home somewhere. But he's not. And in the meantime, they're keeping all of people's energy focused on this kind of stuff by deliberately putting all this stuff out there that gives, you know, the normal people, it drives me crazy. It drives me fucking insane. Because, yeah, I, as you say, I've seen a lot of, you know, shitty WebM videos on 4chan. I've never seen anything where, like, compression artifacts cause, like, it looks like, you know, 1 second you're on one frame, you're on one side of an object in the foreground, and the next frame you're on the other side of the object in the foreground. That just doesn't happen. So, like, yeah, but you know, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, just give the nigga a life alert at the very least. He's going to be doing this. Like, this is I just feel bad for the man. I know he's done a lot of evil. I know he's done a lot of evil stuff in his lifetime. But
does he even realize
it? That's the final red pill. Yeah, he's is he the one living in a simulation, like a simulacrum of dementia? But man, it just maybe I'm being too white here, man. But it really just tugs at my heartstrings, you know.
Yeah, I don't like seeing like old people, you know, suffer, because it's embarrassing and it's also humiliating. Like to the extent that I still feel like, you know, a part of this country, the fact that this is the leader of it and he's just this stumbling, mumbling old man.
That's why my loser is the pig American empire, because I mean you can just sort of look at this in several different ways, one of which is just as an index for the decline and fall of the pig American empire generally. I mean, it's like,
I think we all wanted the bang, but this is the whimper.
Exactly. It's a sad old man, you know, falling down a flight of stairs, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, press S to spit on the grave of this disgusting polity that only ever disenfranchised the people who made it what it was. Was that me pressing S?
Yes.
Nice.
yeah, my S, my F, and my G key are all very worn out for not all for the same reasons. But yeah, those are all the keys that are just super worn out. And lately, the G key, you know, is probably going to need to get replaced given the pace of things. but yeah, man, if I'm not stepping on your toes, decline of the empire, I think that would neatly tie into my topic as well, which was, you know, just
I just wanted to get one more point in about this. Some thoughts that I had yesterday. One thing I read into this is that where's the CIA or deep state like body double here? Like, why is the, you know, entrenched institution allowing this to happen, doing nothing about it? Like, if there was this a great length of like intel and image management capacity that these organizations, you know, wield, then why are they still letting this happen?
Yeah, I can't remember if it was you in the group chat or someone else on post or something. And Louis Conde in the chat wonders if it's a flex. That crossed my mind as well. I think, though, like someone else's hypothesis that I don't remember, I'm sorry, I can't give you credit because I don't remember, but was that basically it's more a sign of infighting in the power structure, that like, because like the CIA doesn't give a shit. They just want, you know, they want the opium to flow from Afghanistan into the veins of the, you know, heartland American whites.
Yeah, let 1,000 poppies bloom.
Yeah. So as long as that's happening, they don't give a shit. The State Department, you know, they don't give a shit. Like, you know, nobody really cares. like about this figurehead, and they don't even really care about the maintenance of some kind of plausible, you know, I mean, he's a senile doddering old man, and nobody really cares. It's just like, you know, as long as they're the individual little fiefdoms within the power structure are able to get what they want, then, you know, it kind of serves everybody's interests within those little fiefdoms to, you know, the weaker the president, kind of the better. I think in a lot of ways that's, if you want, from my perspective, you want to analyze what is going on, what has been the story of American politics for the past however many years, like especially in the recent past, it's like the problem with Trump was never, you know, that he wasn't going to, like, it wasn't that he was going to give white people anything meaningful. I think that's pretty clear that that was never really in the cards. And that's, you know, he talked a game in order to get elected, but he had no intention of following through. But nevertheless, that was the situation was intolerable to, for lack of a better term, the deep state, precisely because he even just like raised the specter of going after their anti-American power of like, you know, putting the people's interests back at the top of the list. That was unacceptable. And so what we saw with the whole Russiagate hoax conspiracy and the you know, the inability of Trump to get anyone within the DOJ fired, and then the, you know, the whole rhetoric and lead up, and that magical week in the Democrat primaries where you went from like Biden trailing, you know, fourth or fifth behind several more popular candidates, including Bernie, despite his kind of turn to wokeism instead of his original economic populist message. He was still in a quite good position. Everybody within the span of a few days backed out to throw their weight behind Biden. And I think you have to see that. I even saw it at the time, and this wasn't unique to me, but you see that as the consolidation of the deep state's power into like, okay, this is our guy. This is our vessel. This is our vehicle for how we are going to reassert full narrative, full spectrum control over the levers of power within the American imperial apparatus. And so that I think is what's going on there. And now that having achieved that total full spectrum control over the levers of power, like they don't give a shit. They're just as long as the CIA can do its thing in Afghanistan, and as long as the FBI can, you know, gay up white people, like they don't care.
Well, I mean, as the government gets more diverse, are we surprised that they're really phoning it in on this one? that they're really doing a sloppy job? With trying to prop this guy up.
You know, explaining it's just that they really can't do shit.
Yeah, this all kind of reminds me in sort of a weird way. When I'm drawing an absolute blank right now, but who is the child pope back in the you know, the medieval ages? Like the, you know, the pope who was like 8 years old and he didn't actually have any power, right? He just had the crown and everybody was just like rubber stamping his edicts and stuff for him.
Yes. I can't remember. That's really killing me. I usually call these things.
Well, to be fair, you're not Catholic, but this is what this kind of all reminds me of. It's just a really like absurd farce, you know, that both in the case of like, you know, a medieval 8-year old pope and also with our current president, you know, we both have to probably schedule important international meetings around their respective nap times. but speaking of, if we've exhausted that. So my topic, talking about the decay of the empire and all that, was women in the military, like specifically like pregnant women being, you know, being fit for combat or whatever this new dumb meme is that I've seen really crop up in the last 2 weeks. That's what I kind of wanted to wax poetic on a little bit, was just women in the military by the numbers. So admittedly, like what spawned the thought in my head was the discussion of like pregnant women being in the military. And that turned out to be less of an interesting topic than I thought, because, well, it should kind of stand on its face, right? Like, don't, Don't let pregos, like, they should be at home. They shouldn't be like, you know, in the armed services. But one of the things that I kind of ran across was just some interesting breakdowns. So as of 2018, we're looking at about 16.5% of the military being female. I've seen some numbers that I could not I couldn't verify, saying that as of like 2020, the number is as high as 20%. But I couldn't confirm that. You know, it was a little bit specious. So if we'll go with that, like 16.5%, which is roughly 1/6 of the military is female. One of the really interesting things, and I'm pulling up the article right now, if my stupid browser will cooperate. There we go. So this is from the Council on Foreign Relations. Had a really, really illuminating breakdown on the various armed services. So you got the Army, Navy, Marine Corps, and Air Force, and Coast Guard, I'm sorry. And it was breaking down, like, what is the civilian labor force look like, you know, by white, black, Asian, and Hispanic. And then comparing that to the level of recruits, like how many recruits of each race are we getting in each branch, and comparing that to the civilian labor force is kind of like a yardstick, which I think is reasonable. So the civilian labor force between 18 to 44 years old is just shy of 20% black female. And it looks like it's about 17% on this bar chart. And I'll send you the link, TK, so that we can post this in the show notes, because there's a lot of interesting stuff to glean from this. In the Army, they even make a note of it. For Army recruits, and this is 2018 data, the last year, it seems, where they have like everything collated and everything all, you know, packaged up nicely with the data. So among Army recruits, the portion of black women is significantly higher than in the civilian labor force. So we're looking at about 36% of Army recruits are, about 34%, according to this, were black female in 2018, which, dude, how do they get anything done? Like, how? The DMV joke has been made before, but like, good Lord. And then it looks like the and to clarify, that means 34% of like female recruits, you know, are African American. And then there was another interesting note that in the Marine Corps is the only service in which Hispanic men and women are overrepresented among recruits, like relative to the civilian labor force participation, you know, for each race and gender. And
wow, I did not know that.
No, me neither. And it's kind of, you know, I guess I don't have a whole lot to say other than just like, wow, just wow. You know, pointing out the statistics, right? But it's, you know, even like 2 years ago, 3 years ago, it looks like these diversity initiatives were really starting to take root. And I've heard it from, we probably all have veteran friends, active duty friends. And, you know, I've heard it said before that the various armed services are kind of just turning into a jobs program. It's like the post office, right? Where they don't care about the quality of the product. The goal is really just to create a jobs program. And, you know, like all government jobs initiatives, it's falling under this crazy diversity umbrella, these crazy diversity initiatives. And, and so it looks like as well, the Navy is also, like it's batting above the civilian labor force participation for black women and black men, which frankly would really help explain why we've seen a lot of crashes the last 5 years. It's kind of one of the big dirty secrets of the American empire is that a lot of ships have had like not even combat crashes, but just run of the mill. Like we're doing a training exercise. We're doing a logistics exercise. We're just getting this ship from point A to point B. and like having crashes. What was the
niggas really letting Kodak Black drive the boat?
I haven't thought about Kodak Black. Did Trump pardon him? I can't remember.
Oh, I think he did. Something like that.
Well,
I just remember that vine of him going, "Let me drive the boat."
You know, I never quite got on the vine train. I guess that's
because you're a millennial.
Yeah, I guess that makes me officially old. You can, you know, all my clout is just yeeted right there. But really, I think since women in the military, right, were just being, it is kind of like, you know, I was seeing it a lot on Twitter, seeing a lot like in the normie sphere. I think this is probably old news to somebody who's a veteran, but somebody who's like never served like me, you know, seeing the numbers laid out, like the number of women in the military, frankly, is not even as exciting as is not as troubling as seeing the racial breakdowns of all of this. The only branch of the services where the white participation outpaces the civilian labor force participation is the Marine Corps. Like all of the other ones, the number of recruits, the percentage of recruits is for whites, male and female, is, you know, noticeably lower than the labor force participation rate. And and I know this isn't necessarily a policy wonk show where we deep dive into numbers or anything like that.
But it's very telling. I mean, that's quite an illustrative comparison you make there.
Yeah, and so what this really tells me too is, you know, if we're having this many, if we're recruiting more women, and it looks like the Army is having a very successful concerted effort to recruit black females. Like, bro, I understand now why they put so much money into the drone program, because it doesn't require a standing army.
Yeah.
You know, the drones aren't going to argue with each other and get into a weave pulling fight about a baby daddy.
Yeah. But they'll try.
But I've waxed poetic there for a good minute now. You know, what do y'all think? What was y'all's take on this whole, you know, women, pregnant women, diversity in the military, that whole bit?
I'm not going to lie. The Hispanic overrepresentation gave me a flashback to Modern Warfare 2. Ramirez, come protect Burger Town! Just the infamous line from one of the missions in Modern Warfare 2. But we have Ramirez in Burger Town right now. It's in D.C. they are still there, the National Guard.
Yeah, I know. The Hispanic in the military thing is interesting. I mean, we like to joke about Castizo futurism as a meme. In all honesty, I think there's something to it. As I said, I'm not on Twitter anymore, but when I was most recently, and I noticed that people I think have mentioned Pedro Gonzalez, who seems to be, he's an interesting figure. He seems to know what's up. He needles conservatives in the right way. He's adopted a pro-white, explicitly pro-white position, to the extent that I think in his Twitter bio he refers to himself the way that some libtard referred to him as a quote Hispanic. I forget what it was, basically like a pro-white Hispanic. He looks white. I don't know what his mestizo admixture is, if any. It's a I wouldn't say little known fact, but it's just a kind of like underappreciated feature of within American politics that, like, you know, Steve Saylor likes to refer to conquistador Americans. There are a lot of, like, fully white European people of basically 100% Iberian descent who are, like, 0% mixed or whatever, maybe, you know, less admixed than the average American with some Native, you know, American from, you know, 300 years ago. Maybe they had a great, great, great grandma or something. But you have a lot of white people with Spanish surnames in Latin America. And then on top of that, you have a lot of functionally castizos, you know, 60-70% white or thereabouts, who you know, are very pro-American, and they're not, and like, you know, I mean, the alt-right being a Hispanic movement is definitely not a meme. I mean, you see a lot of that on 4chan and elsewhere. So like, I don't know kind of what the long, you know, it's maybe an interesting question when we win to sort of sort out to what extent, you know, how it's going to be for the heritage white population and people who are maybe don't have, you know, family going back like yourself, Nike, you know, to all the way back to the American founding, but are 100% European of European descent, more recent, you know, European immigrants, how that's going to shake out in terms of, people who are either, you know, 100% Iberian Spanish speakers or, you know, that's their family heritage or are, you know, these kind of castizo race warriors that are going to be on our side. But the point I'm making here is I think the way that this seems to, like, it's going to me, because these people hate, like, the tranny shit. They do not like gays. They do not like trannies. A lot of them are just in it for, like, a better lives for themselves and their families. And this whole natural conservative rhetoric is bullshit in a lot of ways. But you know, like, I think there's an accommodation to be reached, certainly a practical accommodation to be reached, with both Minesweeper and Louis Conde in the chat note have great points. Louis says, not gonna lie, I have Hispanic coworkers who are the most receptive to third position politics. Minesweeper says, tolerate the Hispanics, but we must stamp out Santa Muerte. Hard agree on both points. But yeah.
Yeah, like, that stuff is wild.
But that's also mostly, those aside, are just like straight up Aztecs for the most part who are doing that stuff. Like, I mean, like, racially, those are the least Aryan for the most part, like least Spanish descent, like actual Spanish, you know, Iberian descent. So, but anyway, I mean, it doesn't really matter. The point is, I think, like, I mean, again, there's a lot of different ways this could go, and nobody really knows. I certainly don't know, and my personal anticipation is we're not going to see armies marching in a field. We aren't even probably. I expect things to get sort of, you know, gradually worse, and violence to be sporadic and centered mostly in urban cores and kind of, you know, plausibly, you know, like, not necessarily politically motivated. But the brute force fact is, yeah, when you're talking about the composition, I know we're talking about Hispanics now, not rather than women, but I think it's a related point, and it, like, you know, what is the United States military? What is it there for? And how is it going to be used? How can we expect it to be used? And so on. And yeah, like, you know, I think that, like, those Hispanic soldiers in the American military, they don't have any particular loyalty. Trad Dad in the chat notes, yeah, they have no loyalty to the nation, opportunity based only. Yeah, they're in it for a paycheck. They don't give a shit about America. That actually is good for us, right? Because I don't care about America either. Like, the sooner this gay empire falls, the better. So, like the less loyalty they have, in a sense, the better. Like, I don't know, maybe you disagree, I'm not sure.
No, I guess on the one hand, I'm not excited about the military, like, being full of foreign nationals just trying to get a cheap green card or cheap citizenship. Yeah, obviously that's insane.
Like, that is clownish piss earth stuff. Like, that is not a sane security policy. Like, put that out.
Not particularly, no. So I am not excited about that. But to your point, right, to kind of, like, draw a fine dividing line, if it means that America is therefore, if a happy accident of that is that America is less able to enforce, you know, a blockade to make Botswana legalize sodomy, then so be it. You know, good can come from bad.
Quetzalcoatlwafen will rise up. Screenshot this. I love that. Quetzalcoatlwafen. Yes.
Precisely. The Naztec future arises.
Naztec bowl. Is. Yeah. And also, I will say, to our Spanish listeners, I guess, maybe we've been neglecting them. my Spanish is rather rusty. Nuestra paciencia tiene sus límites, which is Spanish that I garbled for our patience has its limits. Hopefully that'll resonate with them.
Yeah, I just want to make it clear because we got some discussion in the chat. I'm not a Castizo futurist per se. I'm not like advocating that as a position. I don't think that that's like. I just think like you know, look, we are in a racial. It is a global racial struggle. And like we need allies, you know, like, just as a pure matter of power politics. And I just think that there's some like unless we're talking and that's another position we can take while we're kind of, you know, totally while we are spinning out long term future scenarios. Jazz Hands has advocated, and I think there's a definite argument to be made of like, you know, well, no, North America is going to be white people land. That's one route this can take. That's, you know, certainly defensible, and I think it makes a lot of sense. There's another route we could take where most of North America is white people. Even if that's the case, it's like you have all these people who, you know, it makes sense for Northern South America or whatever. You know, to be a racial homeland for mestizos. I think that's reasonable. And I think furthermore that in principle, they could be receptive to something along those lines. So, sorry.
Oh man, I heard some power tools and then some siege baby in the background. Good Lord. What's he doing?
We are sieging. Sorry about that.
Oh my God.
Is he like building a battering ram to, you know, break down the door for the post office?
Trebuchet, nice, classic.
That was always fun doing that kind of stuff in physics class and making a trebuchet. So I mean, he's young as hell. If he's already working some power tools, he's getting into the trades and he's learning the physics of it all. Man, maybe he'll be the next Fuhrer if he's already on that steep of a learning curve. I like it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think we've more or less exhausted that topic. Really, really what I wanted to bring up was just like the kind of like wild numerical disparity that was going on with recruits. And we were not seeing the last concluding thought I have on that is we're not seeing that same disparity in the officer class yet. But, you know, it will matriculate through, obviously. And So we might see some just hilarious, like nuclear grade, literally nuclear grade fuck ups, you know, here in the next decade, as some of these erstwhile Shaniqua Army recruits, you know, make it up the officer chain. So, grab your popcorn and hold on to the fence, baby. But
like I always.
But
do.
I think we. Yeah, I can't hold on. I can't go and grab the fence if I never let go, right?
Yeah, how do I hold my popcorn and this fence at the same time?
So DK, I think, you know, was there anything, I think we had some prep in your stack as well that you wanted to attack just to gracelessly pivot here?
I guess he's still dealing with the siege baby.
Oh yeah, well, yeah, I guess when he said siege, right, like maybe siege baby when he's making a trebuchet, he didn't think it was the book Siege, right? He thought he was gonna Deus Vault
down castles here.
Yeah, well, in which case, man, let's kick it over to Unique. Hey, what else you got that you want to wax poetic about?
I didn't really have much else that I still feel like talking about. I found some stuff about this Atlanta shooter, some anti-racist statements, but nothing very like conclusive. Chastised a school security guard who was caught on camera making some racial slur and was critical of it, according to a friend of his.
Well, in which case, confirmed, guy, not our guy.
I mean, yeah, I think that's pretty much been the case. I mean, I haven't seen anything that ever said he was close.
To clarify, I was just being a smartass.
Yeah. He's a coomer who went nuts. As the one cop said, he had a very bad day.
Yeah, you know, he does have really...
He was trying to get off porn by getting rid of his smartphone. He got a flip phone, so he wouldn't be able to go online.
Which brings you to, like, the, you know, your heart goes out to the guy. Like, why is he in this position? That's my question. Is like, you know, well, he's
the most radical, atomized person in the country, and that's just, you know, a fact that he was radical. There's plenty of atomized people just like him that haven't gone as far.
Yeah, and I have to say, too, you know, you mentioned that he was a coomer. Like, that dude looks rough, man. He kind of reminds me of, like, the videos you'll see of Amish kids going on Rumspringa, and how they'll just, like, grab whatever modern clothes they can find. He definitely has kind of he's got a strong, like, Rumspringa vibe going on. Yeah, and if you're not familiar with that, man, those are on par with some of the World Star videos, just in terms of how crazy they are. If the audience is looking for just to go down like a YouTube rabbit hole or something like that. But yeah, DK, I guess are you back from dismantling the trebuchet? I heard you for a hot second there.
Yeah, although I think we have to keep it a little bit. We can start maybe wrapping it up ish. I mean, I don't know how much else we had in terms of prep. I just have one little article, which I don't even know how relevant it is, just about stuff happening in Ukraine. What else did we even have?
If you had something on Ukraine, let's go into that. Atlanta guy.
It's I don't know how much else there is to say about Atlanta guy other than, well, maybe just to round out my point that I kind of foreshadowed earlier, like, he should not be in this position.
No.
There should not be internet pornography. There should not be brothels. There should not
be, like, jerk-off massage parlor.
Right. Like, this should not be thing. Like, he should not. It's not. Mike always says, and it's a great thing, and I use this all the time, and I think you all should, too, in, you know, discussing with, like, your normie friends and family members or whatever. It's easy to blame him for, obviously, you know, we don't condone murder, and this is wrong and bad, and he shouldn't have done it, et cetera, et cetera. However, like, to look at him in isolation is to miss the point, because he's not the only one suffering from sex addiction, porn addiction, et cetera. It's an extremely prevalent problem. It's getting more prevalent. And so you have to ask yourself, you know, why? What are the societal conditions that are in place that are producing this effect? Because it's not just him. If something happens over and over again across a wide swath of society, there obviously is more at play than the individual failings of individual people. Obviously, to start asking that question is to essentially be anti-Semitic, because we all know who's behind the porn industry, et cetera, et cetera. We don't want to belabor that point here. We all get it. But I just want to say, like, again, the issue here is not his actions. And if this comes up in any conversations you have, out there, audience out there, don't accept the premise that this is about him. And to the extent that the people are going to try to make it about a premise of, like, anti-Asian discrimination, which is retarded, it has nothing to, like, as you know, it's blacks who are doing the anti-Asian violence, not whites. But to the extent that they want to, this is a great opportunity. If someone wants to turn it into a thing about, systemic white privilege or whatever, be like, yeah, no, turn it around. I agree. There are systemic factors at play here. There are things that are happening in terms of society that made him act out in this way. But it's not some kind of anti-Asian violence, and it definitely has nothing to do with so-called white privilege. It is the fact that our culture, our society, is saturated with pornography and unhealthy, immoral, you know, degenerate forms of sexuality generally. And we see the results of that all around us.
Oh, definitely. And we've talked about it. This is, gosh, this was, I think, like many moons ago, but we talked about it on the show, right? Like, what if the perpetrator happened to be a pale face? What if he got the aspiring rapper treatment? What if he got the good boy treatment, you know, that Tyrone gets, you know, every time there's some drive-by shooting or there's some alleged, like, you know, quintuple homicide or something like that. You know, if you are faced with perhaps like a coworker or a friend or something like that, you know, who really wants to belabor this one incident, just say like, innocent till proven guilty. You know, want to wait till all the facts come out.
Right.
Like he was a good boy. You know, he was going to college. He was getting his life together. Well, I don't actually know if that's true, but you get the idea, right? Like you don't know this guy. I don't know this guy. I don't have to hold water for him. And I'm certainly not going to be held for him. You know, I'm not going to be held like somehow collectively responsible,
especially when
for his actions.
It just had nothing to do with anything connected to white racial politics at all. Like, it just wasn't at stake. Like, I mean, it'd be one thing, not that it would justify their narrative, like, of, you know, oh, this is because of white people, you know, white privilege and discrimination against Asians and blah, blah, blah. Like, even, like, let's say, hypothetically, if he were, like, I would even go so far as to say, let's say he were, not one of our guys, because our guys would never do this, but, you know, someone with white nationalist type leanings, who, for whatever reason, decided, you know, he was gay op by the FBI and honeypotted into doing this for explicitly white racial political reasons. It still would be the case that by the numbers, like, anti-Asian violence is done by blacks. Anti-Asian murders are done by blacks. Anti-Asian rapes are done by the primary thing that's happening in terms of, like, even if you get this one off, and this one person did this one thing one time, by the numbers, statistically, in the aggregate, the phenomenon of racialized violence directed against Asians is coming from blacks. Tucker, this is a kind of a side note, but it really caught my eye, because, like, you know, as I said, I like to keep an eye on Tucker just to sort of see, like, what are the people who are behind Tucker allowing Tucker to say, to reach the audience that still listens to him, kind of taking him just unironically seriously. Tucker, the other day, went full FBI Table 43 and, like went down.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, and he was like, most violence is intraracial. He used that talking point. Most violence is intraracial. People, you know, whites victimize whites, blacks victimize blacks, et cetera. He has some kind of gay qualifier on it as far as we're not going to draw conclusions. I mean, it was just like the kind of, that's exactly, you know, we know like what he's doing and why. Right. But it's still interesting that he's going FBI Table 43. And then he said there's one exception to that, which I actually didn't know. But I mean, of course, in hindsight, I kind of should have guessed. He said there's one exception to that. Violence is primarily intraracial. The one exception is, unlike every other race, Asians are most likely to be victimized by blacks. And that's Tucker saying that. So now, I mean, again, I don't want to get into, like, you know, what is Tucker's purpose? And I think we all get he's kind of, you know, it's a pressure relief valve in various ways, blah, blah, blah. It's not about Tucker himself. It's just to say, like, that's the reality. That's the statistic. And this, even if this guy had done this for explicitly, you know, racial political motives, it wouldn't change that statistical reality. However, he didn't do it for racial political motives, and that premise should not be granted, and that should be fought against at every turn.
Yeah, I mean, because like you were driving at, if we want to talk about systems, if we want to talk about averages, if we want to talk about, you know, system-wide stuff, yeah, I mean, Table 43 has been our best friend for what, going on 30 years? It's, I am tickled pink. I know Tucker is... There's probably a good argument to be made that Tucker is, in certain ways, like controlled opposition, and he's not always as spicy as I would like him to be. But it does absolutely tickle me pink that he's busting out some FBI crime stats, like some newly red pilled, like, you know, poll thread poster circa 2014.
He got you know, don't ask me how I know, he got humiliation ritual from Blake Neff via Borzoi, right? So like, there's a pipe there. The alt-right, quote unquote, or whatever you want to call it, the R thing to Tucker pipeline is or has been real, you know. So then it just becomes a question of like analyzing, if you want to, like, okay, well, what gets through and how is it presented and why, right?
Yeah, and I think the bellwether will be if Tucker starts cracking jokes about big trucks, then it'll be incontrovertible, right? Like, we'll know the pipeline is flowing hot and heavy right there. but no, it is that the whole Atlanta shooter, the whole like just you know, they covered it on previous TDSs. Like, especially I believe it was the Wednesday episode, they broke it down really well. So I don't really have much to add in that regard. Other than that, it's just so retarded and frustrating. But I know we're all up against some pretty hard, IRL like time deadlines for today. So I think that was the last thing you had in your stack, DK, you want to talk about? Nikkei, you got anything else cropping up you want to talk about?
Nope, I'm all good.
All righty. Yeah, and that's all I got, man. So let's do it to it with the plugs. DK, what you got for us, man?
Well, first, just really quick, I just wanted to, like, as I mentioned Ukraine, I'm sure there's going to be some autist in the audience like, but you mentioned Ukraine. Yeah, there's it's fine. It's 2 minutes. There's a military buildup in the Donbass in this contested region where there's a Russian nationalists speak, you know, ethnically and linguistically Russian speakers who have broken away from Ukraine. There's a military buildup on the border between that and Ukraine proper, and tensions rising. So, you know, keep an eye on that, I guess. We'll see what happens. As for plugs, as I mentioned, my friend Lewis and I, we have now two new podcasts. I am officially the sort of Neo Borzoi, I guess, and starting all these shows. Yeah, so we have, as is well known, the National Institute for Gamer Review, and that is ongoing. And but we also have a new show called Culture Terror. We'll be discussing, primarily probably books, but also art, architecture, music. Media of all sorts. We'll have to sort of, I guess, figure out how the how that's going to work. And for now, it's on the National Institute of Gamer Review, NIGR. I will not be pronouncing that acronym because I would like to keep this channel. But it'll be on the same RSS for now. I probably will split it off, but I just wanted to like give people a heads up and sort of do a soft launch. That's available on our RSS. I'll be putting it up on YouTube and Odyssey soon. Our first episode is Lewis and I discussing Cultured Grugs, Borzoi's newly published collection of essays. And so that's that plug. And of course, the National Institute for Gamer Review itself. We just published a new episode on the rise and fall of BioWare. Our next episode will be on Gears of War. So look for that next week.
Oh, that sounds fun, man. I'll definitely have to tune in for that one. All right. And then, Nikkei, what you got to plug for us, man?
All right. Listen to TYH on therightstuff.biz and give your boy a follow on Pleroma at Nikkei at nobodyhasthe.biz. I'll be in the show notes. Check it out. Give me a follow.
Alrighty.
Sorry, yeah, wait, and, one last second. I just realized I didn't even, because I'm so new to this, we got a donation of 0.75 lemons from, maybe it was from D-Lot, I don't know. We got a donation, so whoever that was, thank you very much. We really appreciate it, and every little bit helps, so thank you. Alright, sorry.
Alright, awesome. Yeah, and going back to your plug, Nikkei, if I remember right, I think there was an episode I've got in my RSS hopper of TYH that dropped last week.
No, you didn't.
Do you even have an RSS? What? I thought you didn't have an RSS.
No, we have no RSS.
Yeah.
Well, in which case, I'll maybe I'm just getting as senile as Biden then. I don't know, man.
Yeah, I think that's the case.
I'll go throw myself down some stairs here ASAP. But, all right. But don't pick me up. Yeah, just let me lie. So for me, I just want to plug The Fit Lords. It's a show about like lifting and finance. You know, fun little passion project, reasonably apolitical. So look us up right now. Right now we're just hosted on Telegram. So if you just search The Fit Lords, give us a follow. That's where we'll post episodes. Working on a website right now. But yeah. So anyways, just want to thank the live audience for tuning in. And thank you to my co-hosts for making time on a Saturday morning. And so
always a pleasure.
Last parting wisdom I'll give is remember, guys, the real ethno state was the friends that we made along the way. Play us out.
Are you supposed to say, Mr. Producer, hail victory, see you, Kyle?
All right, fine. Mr. Producer, hail victory, see you, Kyle. We'll be right back.